Well, how do these texts help us figure out what we're supposed to do? Because that's what the sermon title is all about. What do we do? And when I was looking at the texts, they didn't seem to have a lot of commonality, which, as I've said before, they don't have to, and they don't always, but often they do. And I was looking at these, and they really don't at all. And so I thought, well, maybe it's just me. And so I went and looked at some people who are much wiser than I am about biblical things, and they said they don't really connect to each other either, so I didn't feel so bad. Because we've got the Ten Commandments, we've got a psalm about nature that, according to at least some people, might have a snippet of a poem directed not to God, but to some other god of the sun that I'd never even heard of before, named Shamash. We have Paul talking about wisdom and foolishness and stumbling blocks, and we have Jesus clearing the temple. So where do we find ourselves in these texts? Well, I couldn't work out how they all came together, so I thought we'd just look at one or maybe two of them. And the Ten Commandments is one that I keep coming back to off and on, realizing that everything I know about it, when I come back to it again, is inadequate. And it doesn't mean that what I knew before is wrong, because it isn't. It's just that every time I come back, I'm a little bit older, I know a bit more, I've done some more investigation, I've, as I said, read people who know more about these things than I do. And I come back with a new understanding of it. Because when we first think of the Ten Commandments, you think, well, there they are. They're ten rules. Although the first one's long and kind of hard to figure out where it ends. But you know, look at the Ten Commandments in Jewish, in the Hebrew, it's like ten words, what they call it. Okay, so there you are. There's your list of things to do. Do that and you're fine. Well, and that's part of it, of course. But what I found interesting as I was looking around is someone described this not as a list of rules, but as a description of how the relationship between us and God works. And I hadn't thought of it in that from that end before. And so that's what I have been thinking of it for the last little while. And the Ten Commandments breaks out into three parts, if you will. And the first part, where God is speaking of these things, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt and out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. And goes on describing this part of the relationship. What it's making clear, because this is the last part in all of Scripture where God speaks directly to everyone, where God speaks to his people. After this, God speaks through Moses and then through prophets and then through Jesus. I mean, God is Jesus. Yes, I understand that. But we're not going into some kind of weird heresy here. But this is the last time that God, as the Old Testament God, speaks directly to his people. And what he's doing here, among many other things, is helping people realize that God is not an impersonal force. That God is not like the gods of other places. Because one of the things that we often think, as we are now in this Trinitarian monotheistic view, is that everybody's always thought this way. But when we look at over and over again in the Old Testament, it appears clear that the Jewish people and all the people around them thought there were lots of gods. It's just the Jewish people were quite certain that they'd got the right one, the real one. The rest of them were false gods. They were something else. It wasn't that there was nothing except God. It was that other people had mistaken things. And most of what they'd mistaken were beings that behaved more like malicious gravity than his people. And what God is doing here in this first part is helping us see that God is a being of a different order than we are, but not a different kind, if you will. That there's this relational aspect that we can have with God, because God has a name that matters, that we can't represent God in a meaningful way by something that we make out of stone or wood. And what God is doing here is he's beginning this process from the beginning of saying we are connected in the same way that all relational beings are connected. And we're connected in ways that will the rest of Exodus, the rest of the Torah, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament, continue to flesh out and help us to see. But God is making it perfectly clear that our connection with God is a connection of relationship, not just of cause and effect, and not just of order, command solely, and obedience. God's a person, and that's something new back then. There's never any sense of a relationship with the gods of the rest of the cultures in the ancient Near East. There was a relationship in the same way. There's a relationship between rain and you. Rain makes you wet, and you are wet. You can call that a relationship, I suppose. It's more of a cause and effect than anything else. But God is saying, no, we have a connection that is meaningful in the same way that our connection with each other can be and is. And then the second part of the Ten Commandments is about the Sabbath. And the Sabbath is about rest, but not just a suggestion that we do something that's good for us. This doesn't come from the perspective that says that if you work too hard, you'll die young. I mean, we know that, and it seems to be the case for most people. And yes, we all know the example of people who worked 7 days a week for 90 years. But they're the exceptions. For most of us, if we don't get enough rest, we get sick. And if we get sick, that causes problems. God's call to Sabbath is something more than that. Because what God's call to Sabbath here is saying something different about how we react or how we relate to the world around us. He's pulling us out of this notion that says that God or the king or whoever's above you has a 100% right to all that you do and can always tell you to work, work, and work. And when you think that the Ten Commandments were given in the context of the Israelites coming out of Egypt where they were enslaved, I'm pretty sure slaves worked 7 days a week. I don't think they got Sundays off or Saturdays or any other day off. I don't think rest was built in. I think the idea was that I'm the master, you're the slave, you're going to work until you can't work anymore. There's no possibility of anything otherwise. And God is saying that rest is something that transcends that requirement to work, that transcends the need to productivity, is how somebody put it. And it's still the same for us. A commitment to Sabbath takes us entirely out of the culture we're in. Because no matter how difficult it is for us to believe this for ourselves or how difficult it is for culture to believe it on our behalf, we are not simply consuming units in a culture, which if at one time measured us primarily by what we produced, now measures us also by how much we consume. That we're told on an ongoing basis that we need to purchase more, we need to do more. And it isn't always just the crass having a bigger house. It's we need to go on bigger and better vacations. We need to have better this and better that. We need to be constantly consuming things. If you do want to get some rest, you need to do it in a very expensive spa or with someone who will charge you a great sum of money to tell you exactly how you should rest. There are sleep coaches, which I think is kind of a tragedy, that we've reached the point where we have to have people teach us how to sleep. I'm not talking about people who have difficult sleep apnea or something. This is to teach you how to be the most effective sleeper you can be, which is one of the most peculiar sentences I've ever encountered. Our culture says that we need to be doing to the point where we've now called our rest doing. You know, do you sleep well? Well, when you start turning sleep into a verb and a qualifying verb that says you can do it well or not, I think there's something amiss. What the call to Sabbath is saying that that's not what we're about. We are not about what we produce or what we consume. We're not about what we do. What Sabbath does, and I am in the spirit of full disclosure, I do this really poorly. I don't rest well at all. I was talking to my spiritual director, and we came to the conclusion that it might be too late for this Lent, but maybe for Lent I need to practice rest, which is also a peculiar sentence and a weird thing to have to come to. We don't rest well because we don't understand that rest is something that says you exist, therefore rest is part of you. You don't earn Sabbath. You don't earn this. It's part of what makes you fully human, that you rest. It's not a reward. It's part of the rhythms of how we live. And we'd like to ignore that. And we'd like to work lots. And most of us do, or at least many of us do. It doesn't seem to be helping us much. Our inability to unplug from our devices is just the latest symptom of our inability to step away from the doing and to move into simply being. God says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. This is part of what sets us aside. Because part of what rest does is it says that God will care for us whether we work 7 days a week or six, or whatever it might be. One of the things, and this is something that has come back to me off and on, when somebody said, if you work all the time, what you're saying is, whether you mean it or not, and whether you intend it or not, you're saying that God can't care for you unless you do all the work. Which isn't the case. We're called to depend on God for things that are beyond what we can do at all, and also to depend on God to fill in those gaps when we do what we need to do. And part of what we need to do is rest. The last section of the Ten Commandments is, of course, the one in one sense that we know the best, if nothing else, are shorter. Many people who memorize the Ten Commandments sort of struggle with the first bit there. But then when you get into this list, it's pretty easy. I mean, honor your parents, don't murder people, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie, don't give false witness, don't covet things. Well, this last section is about how we interact with the people around us. This is about the community that we find ourselves in. And everybody's in a community, whether it's small or large, it doesn't matter. It's virtually impossible to be an individual, sort of a sole human being, even if you're willing to sort of step over the fact that you somehow got to the point you are with lots of help from lots of other people, and now you're going to go live, you know, in the bush somewhere. It's very difficult for most people. We're in a community of some sort. And this, in a sense, lays out not just the bare minimum of acceptance or how to behave. You know, don't kill the people you're around it's a pretty low bar, really. But what it says is that this is one of the things that characterizes people in community, is being aware of what you do and being careful about what you do. Somebody a long time ago summed up the Ten Commandments by saying, you know, the first nine are actually kind of easy. Well, they're not. Well, some of them are easier than others. Not murdering people is actually pretty easy. But the first nine are pretty easy because they're quite clear cut. And at the end of the day, you can look at your behavior and say, did I murder anybody today? And the answer is yes or no. And it's pretty easy to figure out. Stealing, lying, giving false testimony, those sorts of things. But that last one, that business about coveting, that one's harder. Because it's not as clear cut as the other. It's not, you know, at the end of the day, I can say I did not carve out an idol and say it was God. That's pretty straightforward. It's right there. But coveting is different and harder. Harder to keep track of and harder not to do. Because we, once again, we live in a culture that doesn't help us here. Advertising's entire reason for existence is to stoke the covetousness within you to a fever pitch till you go and buy what it is that people want you to buy. But if we are the kind of people who live in a community where we don't just not steal from each other, we don't just not kill each other, but we look at what other people have, not from the perspective of, I wish I had that, but from the perspective of, that's a gift to that person and I'm grateful for it, it changes how we relate to each other. The Ten Commandments, which are obviously then expanded in the rest of Scripture, are the beginning of this picture of what it means to be someone who knows who God is and is in that relationship with God, who realizes that God is a personal being, different than us, but not so different that we can't be in that relationship, that we are created to be people who take rest, who aren't just the sum of what we accomplish, but we have values in and of ourselves, simply because we exist. That's what Sabbath says to us. It doesn't say that once we've worked hard enough, we get time off, or that if we're the right kind of person, we'll get a day off or we'll get rest. It just says human beings get rest because that's what we have, because that's part of what makes us human. And then when we live in community, we do it in ways that are honoring to the community around us. We do it in ways that care for the people around us. And not just the obvious things of not injuring them or damaging them, but of being as aware of what they have and the joy it might bring them rather than the joy it would bring us. By being able to look at people without jealousy. Be able to look at what other people have from the perspective of all what you have is a gift from God. And I'm not going to covet that any more than, well, anything. The Ten Commandments seem in some ways removed from us, or they seem simplistic. Those are the two things that we often run across. And neither one of them are really true. The fact that you could write them out on a 3x5 card means that they're not terribly complex in the sort of the language end of things. But there's a lot there for us that we sometimes miss, that I sometimes miss. And as I came back to it this year, as the lectionary took us to this part of the Bible again, it was that threefold reminder of the personhood, the reality, the relationality part of God that I can lose, even I can lose after all these years, and think that God is just not quite an impersonal force, but you know, not really connected. We can't lose that. We need to be reminded of that. And it's been that way always, not just with Jesus showing up, but always. God has always wanted to be in relationship with his people. And he wants to be in relationship with us, not because of what we do, but simply because of what we are. Because we exist. Which is why we deserve rest, why Sabbath is put there for us. Not because of something that we go out and purchase, but because we have it. And that from there we move into a community. A faith community like this one, a municipal community, a civil community, whatever you want to call it, a family community. We're in all these different communities. And this is the beginning of the process of saying, this is how you live in it. This is how you're the kind of person that you should be by living this way, by doing these things and by knowing these things, knowing that God is in relationship with you, that you are of value just because you are, and that you're not alone. That the community you're in is part of what makes you you. Sure, there are things you need to do to make it work. But never forget that you are in a community that comes with all kinds of blessings. The Ten Commandments aren't just these 10 words that were handed off to the Israelites thousands of years ago. They still have much for us. And it's worth spending some time with, as I did this week, just to see what they might be holding for you. Amen.